Hello, hello, and welcome to the Borealis Experience. I'm your host, Aurora, life coach and companion on this journey called life. And I'm very, very excited to have a very nice treat for you today. I have Rick with me, Rick Janko, a dear customer, coaching customer of mine, maybe a future friend of mine. Today he came over for a beautiful snowshoe and had a blast on our property. And I think he mentioned that he would want to have a sleepover at the yurt at some point because the yurt is so cozy during winter and we might organize that. But yeah, if you're new to this show, welcome, first of all, and thank you for finding me and us. Yeah, this show is all about serving you on a mental, emotional level, inspiring you to dig deeper and reconnect with your heart, your soul, your desires, your dream, and make sense of yourself and how you make decisions. And if you are a long-time listener, you know that during a couple seasons, I interviewed my warriors, and warriors are the guys that enter my life without coincidence. The universe sends them my way, and I feel inspired to interview them because they show up in this world as heart-driven leaders or fathers or simply men that I think need to get interviewed for us to have hope, to know that there is good men out there and to know that we should be focusing on those heart-driven men and feel inspired, feel supported and protected because they got a story to tell. And it was no different with Rick. We started talking and he shared a little bit about his story. And I'm hoping that, you know, in the future, after this episode, we'll keep working on a maybe future vision on supporting young men or people out there who want to start a journey of healing and emotional health. So without further ado, I'm going to give the mic over to Rick. Thank you so much for making the time to come out today. And maybe you want to introduce yourself shortly and share what you're passionate about, what you spend most of your time with. It might be your job or a hobby. And yeah, let's go from there.
Hey, Aurora. Well, thank you for that introduction. And my name is Rick Janko. I'm an advanced care paramedic in Alberta here, and I've been doing this for well over 30 years, for hobbies, I really love to be in the outdoors. I love to fish. I'm not very good at it, but I can lie like the best fisherman, I guess. But I do love to be out there in just in the wilderness and whatever. I love to drive. Driving is a passion of mine. I've been driving since I was knee high to a grasshopper, back in the old days. But I just love to go and travel. And then my other passion was woodworking. I love to build things out of wood. Again, I go with the rule that, as long as you can't see my mistakes within 3 feet, it's perfect and that. So, been doing these things for a few years off and on and like that. So that's kind of where I'm at. Be happy to tell you my story of mental health and the issues that I faced in my 30 plus year career and my thoughts on where I was and my thoughts on where I am now.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. I think what intrigued me the most to invite you out here recording this episode is that you had shared that it was not always natural to you to speak about what's going on inside of you. You described yourself as a closed-minded person and a person who yeah, is very focused and driven and passionate about his job of rescuing people. And so I'd love to hear a little bit more about your journey of 30 years being a paramedic and now having that kind of turnaround or opening up of the heart and the soul. How did that journey of self-care and self-awareness start?
Well, I think we need to go back before that as to who I was and why I was the way I was. So growing up, I was in the 80s, I became a paramedic in the early 90s, and it was a professional career that I took. And so back then, mental health was never a thing for men. We looked at PTSD and things like that. You know, PTSD were from the military, the soldiers that saw the huge death the paramedics and us, we didn't see that, or some of us did, but the modern person, the person not in emergency services or the military or the police should never have PTSD, because they would never usually see things that these people would see. So that was kind of the belief that we had, and even I can remember many times when we'd have staff members or partners or people in my field, and we'd hear that they'd gone off on stress leave and stuff like that, and then you would hear that, well, yeah, they had a bad call, and then you would hear that, well, you hear what the call was, and you go, well, shit, they did three of those last week. I mean, there's no big deal, and I don't know why they're so having so much trouble with that, and probably just wanted a day off, or and whatever. So, I mean, this was rampant in emergency services as a whole throughout the early the 80s and in the 90s and in the 2000s and that. So, I mean, that was just the way we thought it was. And I looked at, me, I'd do a call, I'd do a bad call, and my partner and I would sit on the back of the tailboard of the ambulance outside the hospital wherever we were, and we would dissect the call. We'd be having a coffee and a cigarette, and we'd be sitting there and talking about it, and then we'd file it away in the back of our minds and get ready for the next call. We'd think we'd learn from these calls, any of our mistakes, and we'd just dissect them, but then we would just bury them. And it didn't matter whether it was a good calls or the bad calls, and they just got buried. And I think, looking back at it, burying them was just kind of a way that we would hide them, and we would not have to worry about, the issues coming from the calls. And I guess the word avoidance will be, you'll hear me talk about that more. But that's how we used to avoid it and go from there. So, and this, I've seen this through people in the police forces, my friends in the fire departments, and my colleagues and friends and many friends in emergency services or EMS. I look back and I thought I was doing well. I never had any nightmares of any of my calls, and I've been on horrific calls. I've been on murders. I've been on, hangings, shootings, car accidents, you name it. I've seen most of the things that you could see in my career, and nothing ever seemed to really bother me. There was one accident one time that kind of bothered me for a day or two, and like I said, probably cigarettes and coffee took care of that for me, and that there. And again, we didn't have the healthiest of lifestyles. We worked hard. We were working 24-hour shifts, kind of things, and some of that. And then on my days off, I went into private business, and I kept myself busy. And I wasn't into exercising. My hobbies back then were drinking coffee and smoking and having, BS sessions with all my buddies and stuff. So not a real healthy lifestyle for mental or physical, but I mean, this is what we did, you know. There was no real science behind mental health back then. And so you look back at it and you go, okay, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with me. So then this year, well, probably just over a year ago, around a year ago, I had a bit of a personal issue. And one day I was sitting in the city. I was going to some meetings, and it's been a stressful week, and things were just been really kind of crazy, and I wasn't doing well, and I wasn't feeling well, and I've been having some issues with some maybe, you know, depression, and I was thinking more of the winter time, you know, and that January, February blues and stuff, and then I went to this, was going into this meeting, and I was parked outside of the hospital, and I was sitting there looking at my car, and I was like, what am I doing here? Like, I can't go. I can't, you know, I'm a mess, like, and I'm shaking and like that. So right then I was like, I need some help. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I just kind of had a bit of a breakdown. And so, I had a fellow in my organization that I knew really well that dealt with medical issues and staff on medical issues. And so I phoned him, and I just said to him, like, you know, this sounds, may sound crazy, but I'm here and this is what's going on, and I got to go to this meeting, but I can't, and I'm a bubbling idiot, and I'm crying, and I don't know what's going on. And so then he directed me to my physician and said, you know, you need to go in and see your physician. You're having something going on. And he says, and then when you're done that, he says, you know, tell your physician that we're worried about mental health, and that's maybe work related. So I didn't even go to my meeting. I drove all the way back to my doctor, and I got an appointment that day to see my physician, and I went in to see him, and he's going like, well, what's wrong? And I'm just a basket case. Like, I'm just beside myself and don't know what's going on, and I can't stop crying and stuff like that. And it was kind of embarrassing, I think, at the time. Yeah, and then from there we started the motion of, you know what, mental health. My mental health was not strong. You know, I had some numerous conversations with my physician and I was lucky enough that I was able to get workers' compensation involved, and then through my work we also had an employee program, and I reached out to some of their people, and I started getting a phone call right away from I don't know whether it was a psychologist or from some people there, and so they got the immediate help that allowed me to get over the immediate crisis, and then it just started to be a process from there.
Wow. I have a hard time finding words. This is such a powerful thing that you're doing right now and sharing that, and such a... It must have been so scary to go through that, not knowing what's happening with you. And I'm so glad that you talked to the right people at the right time and that you got help, because I'm sure there is people in similar situations who choose to not ask for help. So I'm very grateful that you just shared that so powerfully and courageously, because there's a lot of stigma around mental health issues, right? And especially in your kind of job, you're supposed to be tough, you're supposed to be a protector and rescuing other people. You can't show weakness, you have to function. And a lot of people think that, you know, not feeling well mentally is a weakness, which is absolutely wrong. So from there, you started your journey. You basically had no choice, right? There was no turning back because you were doing so poorly. You were really rock bottom, but you reached out right away. You got the help, and then you engaged on this journey of mental health and healing and probably opening up your heart again to the world. I can imagine that this job sometimes requires you to, you know, just shut your heart down, because otherwise, I mean, with all the horrific stuff that you had to see and go through, no normal person with an open heart could go through this. So I'd love to hear how the first couple weeks or months went after you had reached out for help.
It was kind of interesting, and yeah, I mean, I was lucky that I think one of the things that really helped me in the very beginning was that over the last 3 or 4 years, men's mental health, through a bunch of the public stuff, has become more of an issue, and I may have warmed to the idea that men's mental health was an issue. Still didn't realize that I had an issue, but realizing that, yeah, you know what, not you didn't have to be a soldier or a first responder to get that. So I think that kind of warmed me up a little bit. But when I had my issue, I reached out to a friend of mine, and like I say, he worked in this apartment, and I was lucky because I got a phone call the day after I filed my workers' compensation papers, and this lady, really nice lady from workers' comp, says, she goes, yeah, I see you have a claim here, and we want to make sure you're doing all right. And of course, everybody's going, you know, you're not going to hurt yourself. And I'm going, no, I'm not hurting myself. Everybody asked you that question. Mm. It's a legitimate question. We know that men tend to not say anything and they hurt themselves. But myself, I've always been open about that. I'm not in a position. I don't feel like I want to end my life by any means. But I do know, and I said to the lady in WCB, she goes, well, and the funny thing she said was, well, this really can't be an issue because you're not off work. Do you know, we need to get you off work. And I said, well, no, I said, I don't want to be off work. I said, right now, work is my life. I said, that's where I feel comfortable. That's where I feel safe. And I'm not taking time off work, because my job that I do now compared to few years ago, I'm in the office now, so my biggest worry is a paper cut, whereas before it was the trauma of all the calls. And so I'm in a very safe spot, but again, I don't have, when I'm working, that uses a big chunk of my time, so that my mind doesn't have to wander. And so that was always a big thing with everybody, was, well, why aren't you working, or why aren't you taking time off? It's like, well, if you want me to go off the deep end, put me with nothing else to do at the time, you know. And so, but they were very good. They got me to a psychologist. They got me a fellow from our family program through work. He was a fellow out of Edmonton, and he called me once a week for the first 10 weeks. And he was kind of an interesting fellow. His name was Bo, and he was blunt. And him and I had conversations, and he talked to me about being judgmental and about a bunch of different things in my personality. And he was like, this is you. And I'm going like, no, that's not me. And he's going, yeah, no, this is you. And he would explain things to me. And then I'm looking at it, and these were 1 hour phone calls. And then when I was done, I'm going, you know what? He's right. That was me. I had turned into a closed-minded, judgmental, angry fellow, and that's not who I wanted to ever be. But when you're in doing those things, you can never see that. Yeah. I couldn't see that I judged people with their mental health. I couldn't see that I was angry. I knew I was angry, but I just thought people were idiots. You know, like the one, I excuse the word, but I mean, when I looked at it and go like, you know, and I remember people passing me or on the roads and road rage and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going like, well, where did that come from? Well, that came from many years of not dealing with the traumas of my job. And so after I went through the WCB process, and that was 3 or 4 months, but they were, one thing I will give them huge recommendations on is that they, during their process of doing my claim, they got me to a psychologist, an actual physical psychologist, to get some help while they determined whether it was work-related or not work-related. And that's what I said to them before at the start of it. I said that I don't know if my issues are work-related, but I've been doing this job for almost 40 years. So I'm thinking that they are.
Yeah.
And so anyway, long story short, they did take my claim. But I was working with a really great psychologist once a week and telling my story, telling my stuff. And my psychologist got me looking at life differently, looking at mental health differently, looking at my job, and I think just with my conversations and stuff with her, we did some types of treatment that they do there. And she decided that maybe I was having issues because I never ever got over the death of my dad when I was a young man. So, so as I got feeling better, and then my biggest thing was being outside. I took up walking and walking and walking, and lots of it was just to try and use time. And then I got walking and I hiking and listening to I bought some earbuds and I started listening to some podcasts, and I stumbled on some mental health podcasts, and I just put miles and miles and miles on, and the walking got my mind clear. And then with the tools that the psychologist gave me, I began to heal. And I'm not 100% by any means, but I'm probably way better than I've been for 10 or 15 years in my mental health. So the funniest story now, how Aurora and I met, one day back in November, there was a men's class being held at a yoga studio. And I had nothing to do with yoga. I had never been to yoga. Yoga was new to me. I always wanted to go to yoga to stretch, because like I'd been like a pretzel. And never thinking of yoga and mental health. And so I found this little ad one day about this men's night in the yoga studio for coaching and some meditation. And then it was 3 hours and it was, I don't know, $50 or something like that. And I went, well, I used to smoke and I used to spend probably half of that a day smoking, so I can afford to go on this deal and see what it's all about. And so I went online and I signed up for it. And then the Friday night came a couple weeks later, and I was so nervous to go there because like I always, never thought of myself as being open enough to go to yoga and do these kind of things. And so I went there, and there was two other gentlemen, and Aurora was there, and another lady from the yoga studio. And I'm like, I'm nervous. I don't know what to expect. I'm fidgety and all this. And then they opened up the conversation and we started to talk. And once they did that, and we realized that there was two other guys here who had issues, not necessarily the same as mine, but they had their own issues. And they weren't judging me, and I wasn't judging them. And then the conversations just happened. And we had, 3.5 hours of yoga, some meditation, some coaching that was really, really, really interesting. And it opened up my eyes, going like, well, maybe I should explore this a bit more. So then Aurora, when I got home, they had given us this little package of pamphlets. And so it's like midnight, and I was having a tequila that night for some reason. And sitting back, and I got reading this. And I thought, Aurora has a stretching class tomorrow. Well, I'd like that. I'd like to learn to stretch more. So the next morning, I'm up at 7 o'clock, and I email Aurora and going, hey, I see you have this class, and I'm just trying to find out where you are. And then Aurora comes back shortly after that and says, oh, sorry, my class is canceled because I don't have anybody. And she says, but, if you'd like to come out for a one-on-one session, she says, I have openings today now and whatever. So I thought, well, you know what? I don't know what this is all about. I'm going to go anyway. So I booked a one-hour session, came out here. It was 3.5 hours long because Aurora heard my story. And then from there on, she says to me, the first thing she said was, how can I help you? And I go, I don't know, because I don't know what I need. But from there, she heard my story. She heard a really in-depth story. And now she's coaching me and has done wonders for helping me that in my mental health has just between her and the other tools that I have, I'm on the road to recovery.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Rick, for sharing this. I really didn't expect you sharing that much, and it's such a gift to have you here. And I'm sure, you know, our listeners get a lot of value out of hearing your story and knowing that, yeah, it is not the weak that sometimes stop and, you know, break down. It is especially the guys out there who have lots of responsibility and have lots of will and drive to serve their communities. So I'm so very grateful that we met and that you had the curiosity to come out to the yoga studio and then were curious about the yurt and what I can offer. And so it's been a fabulous journey together. And like I said in our last session, I see growth, I see you blossoming, and I'm very excited for the future to see what's to come. I guess I have one more question for you. I know you have a son. I was very blessed to meet him and your daughter. What do you wish for future generations, younger guys, to take away from this episode and to...
I think the thing that I want to see is for the younger crews and the new paramedics, the new people in first response or emergency response, and just the everyday person is to not be afraid to seek help. If you or your family members see a change in you, find out why. See what's bothering you. See what's causing those changes. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to seek help with a psychologist, with different things, with yoga, with, you know, mental, like walking, just whatever. There's so many different things, and there's so many podcasts out there that talk about different things. But if you see changes or somebody sees changes, you know, look for the reason why. And I'm hoping that our organizations, and I know the one that I'm with right now is they're trying, and it's an uphill battle, but we really need to protect our first responders and their mental health. I think we took it for granted way too long. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing a whole different group of younger people coming in with society. Like the makeup of our kids are different than they were 30, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. Good or bad, that's debatable on whatever you look at that, but they definitely, the new kids are different. And we need to protect them knowing the stressors that we have. Mm-hmm. And I know that in my position now where I'm working, that's one of our main things that we're working on diligently, is to try and help and have people there to help these people.
Yeah, that's very, very important work. And I hope in the future, the two of us, we can come up with, I don't know, workshops or public speaking events.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not a brilliant man, but if I can tell my story and show one or two people every now and then that you can, you know, you don't have to be afraid to speak out.
Yeah.
And they do that.
Yeah.
Then it's worth telling my story.
Oh, 100%. And I'm so grateful that you came out here and we recorded this episode today. And for everybody out there listening, please know that you don't need to be a firefighter, a first responder, a policeman, you know, to have valid reasons to reach out for help. Sometimes it's a heartbreak. Sometimes it's your parents divorcing. Sometimes it's, you know, from back in the day when you were a child and mm-hmm. children were bullying you at school. Like, it can seem so small, but if that is what bothers you, find trusted people that you can open up to, because I'm sure Rick would, you know, agree that the first opening up is scary, but you can feel that this is right and mm-hmm. this is good, and that helps already to speak about it. And then the tools come later and the full-on support, but to open up your mouth and to start speaking about what's going on inside of you can be extremely helpful. That's
the first step, and it's the hardest step for sure.
Yeah.
Because once you've told your story to one person, it's out there. You don't, it doesn't matter then if you tell it to 10.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I don't go and spill my story to everybody, but I obviously have now on a podcast. but I mean, and again, but that's the thing is that we just need to, we need to be able to talk, and we need to not be judgmental of people when they do talk. Even, you know, no matter what your beliefs are on mental health, but if somebody reaches out to and starts talking about their issues, listen to them. Listen to them, and that's all you have to do. And that's the big thing is to, you know, what we're finding now is everybody's different. Everybody handles stressors differently. And, you know, a traumatic call on an ambulance to me may not bother me, but it may bother the brand new paramedic. Mm-hmm. Or if, you know, the firefighter that's there, you know, you don't think that they had their hands on or they should have any stressors because of that car accident because, you know, they were just managing something. But what did they see? What did they hear? Or, you know, he's a plumber and has never been where there's been a death. And so these are the things that we've never realized. And we really need to take account because we're losing people left and right. And it's you know... I don't even know what those kind of rates are, but anytime we lose one person, that's just one person too many.
Absolutely. Yes. Very well said, Rick. And yeah, again, I'm so grateful that you wanted to speak out on my podcast. I'm so ever grateful. And I think that would be it from my side with questions. If there's anything additionally to that that you wanted to add, feel free. But yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me and listen to me kind of babble on as we go through this. It's a mental health for everybody, and we're talking men's mental health, but women are the same. There's, you know, when it comes to PTSD and issues, there's no gender. Doesn't matter what color you are, what race you like. It doesn't matter. People are just people, and we need to work on getting help out there for everybody.
Yes. Thank you so much for being here. Well, dear listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you got lots of value out of this interview with Rick. And if you want to, you know, honor his work, honor his bravery, please make sure to share this episode around so that we can reach as many people as possible who need help, especially those people who need help but are not ready yet to reach out for help. There's just too many people who, you know, struggle, and we as a society, we can do so much more to show compassion, to be sensitive, and... yeah, ultimately to hold space for each other, to hear each other out, to listen. So I want to thank you for being on this journey with me. I want to thank you for being here with us in the yurt today. And yeah, never hesitate to reach out if you want to come on out to the yurt. Check it out, contact me, and we can go for a snowshoe. Or do some yoga, meditation, while we, you know, just chat. All right, take really good care of yourself, and we'll be out there with a new episode very soon again. Bye-bye. Thank you.